Well, welcome to the Humanist Union meeting.
Because I couldn't see anything up there, so I was wondering.
Well, I always get turned off when something is too clever.
Yeah.
You know, and his first part was really so nightclubber that I didn't really like. And you can almost, you know what he's going to say, and I start mistrusting when somebody is that flip. I mean, later on he got into more factual things or more specific things. But I would have liked to hear something about Islam or any of the other religions.
Not too surprising for a nightclub.
Well, that's right.
Well, I guess one question is, who's the target audience that's going to be influenced by this?
I don't think anybody's going to be influenced by that.
That's the question I am all along. Who is his target audience? And it seems to me he's... there's a lot of things he said that I agree with. Mm-hmm. But if he's trying to convince other people through his humor that he's right, I think he just hit some in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to listen after slapped around a bit? There was one episode which wasn't, you didn't see here, but which is in the film, about his going to a truck stop and going to a church that was, it looks to me like it was built within a semi, am I right?
Yes,
right.
Right.
And first of all, I thought very clever of the minister to have a church in a semi. And the men that were in there were honestly in there. They talked a bit about it because they felt it was helpful because one person had been an addict and he felt that this is had kept him out of it. They liked the minister. It was rather interesting. I think all the guys in there were white except the minister who was black. And I suspect, you know, he takes his truck around to various truck stops. And the minister, a very congenial guy, and he didn't let Maher put him off. I mean, I felt there was kind of almost a camaraderie. They're both entertainers in a way. But the men that were there, I grew up around a lot of people like that, and they were there because that they felt a need for it. And here was Maher coming in to their turf, to their sanctuary, and being rude and disrespectful and smart-alecky. And maybe he did make them think. Maybe he made the minister think. But I don't think so. I have a suspicion that they were just so turned off that there could have been some interesting rapport.
I think he was provocative.
He was certainly
But it looked like at the end they weren't really turned off. They were more amused by it.
Well, they were kind of joking with him at the end, but he was so rude.
It's trivial. I mean, from this little bit, and of course I'm more or less an atheist, but if you read Thomas Paine, there's sharp critique and humor and all that. But this is just so on the surface and so flip and superficial. I mean, sure, you can say some funny things and so forth, but that doesn't get to the root of the thing, why people want religion and why a lot of people need religion and that sort of thing. Maybe he gets into that in the longer film. I don't know. I didn't have a chance to see it.
I think that his humor and was appropriate in many places, and he literally was saying things that were true. But I was a little affronted by what he had to say about Mormonism and Joseph Smith. I mean, he didn't name names, but it was obvious he was talking about Joseph Smith. And I think what he had to say about him was really more appropriate for someone like Father Divine. I mean, when you think of the hardships that the Mormons went through before they ever got to Salt Lake City, I don't think you could just describe Smith as someone who said, I have a brilliant idea and we can make money out of this and let's go. Join me. So.
Well, do you think Joseph Smith really believed that he got these golden plates from God?
I think he believed a lot of what he had to say, and frankly, I have never read the Book of Mormon, and maybe I just felt he was being a little harsh there. I mean, if he had been saying Father Divine, that's exactly what Father Divine did. But I don't think that's exactly what Joseph Smith did.
You ask who his audience is, and I think they call it sophomore agreement for a reason. I think his audience could be the youth. You know, when you're think you know it all and everything.
I wish you would say dirty
words. Well, yeah. Plus, I mean, you know, it's provocative to them, and it starts them, you know, thinking that there might be another way to think about things other than what the family says. I think he serves the purpose there.
This is perhaps not appropriate, but he did. The other side of the coin is that for many people, religion helps them to do good things and prevents them from doing bad things. When I was in college, I took a class called Man, Religion, and Society, and the conclusion was religion was good if it helped you to do good things. And, you know, for example, Jehovah's Witnesses worldwide don't fight in wars. They're put to death as they were in Canton because they will not fight. In this country, they will not even be policemen because they will not carry guns that could kill people, you know, and so forth. I mean, I disagree with the description of Nazism as a religion. It was organized state terror, which made people who didn't buy into those things fear for not just their own lives, but their families' lives, and so do things that, and I mean, we have gotten, in this country and in other countries, people to commit atrocities similarly
through
fear. Oh, those Japs, those gooks in Vietnam, those whatever, they are the other. So I don't know, I think that needs a much more in-depth look.
Be honest.
Yeah, the question is really about the format. Does he himself see this as a sort of an upgraded nightclub act, or does he think he is going in depth enough to really make people think? I really, the whole thing is just, the only solid thing I thought was when he got into the papacy and this one man thing, and showed, you know, the big buildings and actually the power of money of the Catholic Church. That's when he started to do something concrete, but just very short and very briefly. And maybe we are not the right audience either, because we know more about the religious and politics, the connections between politics and economics and religion. So I think maybe he's trying to preach to the choir.
You can't judge the movie by that.
By that, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You have to watch the film.
Yeah.
He speaks to an imam. He speaks to a Jewish rabbi, a radical Jewish rabbi, where he actually gets up and walks. His mother was Jewish, and he didn't even know, and his father was Catholic. He was raised Catholic. His mother never went to church. He never even knew his mother was Jewish. He didn't know he was half Jewish.
Yeah, there's the scene with his mother.
His mother is interviewed.
Why didn't you go to church? Why did you let them take me to church? I mean, it was really.
Plus, I don't think Marr considers himself to be an atheist. I think he's more of an agnostic in his beliefs.
Yeah.
I've watched this movie several times, and I'm a big fan of Bill Maher's. When's the last movie you saw that actually went through religion and kind of cut through the crap?
Well, I mean, any Michael Moore movie, of course, I've always seen.
Michael
Moore's
a Catholic.
recovery.
God love him.
Yeah.
But what Bill Maher does is he's appealing to an audience that probably never thought of some of this stuff before. The Mormons are as weird as the Scientologists.
Oh, sure.
Read about Joseph Smith. Oh. If you don't know anything about Mormonism, then read about it.
Yeah, I know.
He was a con man.
But you know, there was something on this film that said deleted items. Are these maybe the things that were cut out of the real movie?
Sure. These are the outtakes.
Oh well, then that definitely doesn't give us a real idea of the real thing.
I think too that he is.
Oh well, that makes all the difference. Yeah.
He is getting also some of the extreme parts of various religions. which I think is justified, and I have no problem with that, but he doesn't give you the, like, the everyday lives of people in those religions. And I'm not one to defend Mormonism, but I've got a lot of Mormon relatives, and they're kind people. One of the reasons that Utah got settled the way it was because of people coming in, and you know, if you were a doctor and there was another settlement, you would, if there were two doctors in town, one of the doctors would go to the other settlement. And during the Depression, they took care of their own. I mean, if people didn't have money, someone else would come in and help out. And I've been in a lot of homes of people from that religion, and they're, I would say, to a person, the people whom I know, which has been very, very kind, caring people. They have an airplane at Salt Lake ready to go at any moment when there is a worldwide disaster.
Aren't they required?
So, you know, so there's, you know, there's this kind of what the religion says it is, and then there's what
they drop by.
What people do. But also I agree that some of the police are way too far out for me.
Oh, aren't they required to do something good for other people once a month?
I don't know.
That's what I learned when I was in Utah camping.
Well, they have the missionary requirement for 2 years.
Everybody.
Right. You
no,
know
everybody
that.
Everybody is
yeah.
required to do yeah. that once
yeah.
a month, do something for others.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Well, Bill Maher's basically a comedian.
Yeah.
I think his target audience is the younger people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to show young people the ridiculous side of their religion, the extremes.
Yeah.
So from that point, I think it has a real value in terms of trying to shake people up and make them think of it. And I think on the larger sense, personally, he's aware that there are some very big issues right now in our American society, and with regard to those elements of religion that are so extreme that, you know, in terms of he's talking about the best way to have a suicide bomber not blow himself up was, you know, to, as Freud said to one of his young clients, you know, the best thing for you to do is save up a few dollars and go out and get laid. Because the man was, you know, the boy was just going off the deep end. And I think there's, you know, he's trying to show some insights in a very real sense into how religion, carried to extreme, can do the things that, you know, led to 9/11, and there's a whole history of exterminations that are religiously based.
Yeah, the Crusades.
He's right to challenge that. Fareed Zakaria had one of the questions today on his show about the present Pope made a statement that the Jew should not be held responsible for killing Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the Pope announced that.
Right.
The Pope announced
so,
that.
But
the Pope was also in charge of the Spanish Inquisition before.
The trouble is that shouldn't be Pope. I forgot what he is now, 16 or whatever.
Yeah,
it should have been like Pope 6 or something.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. They're a little slow. How many years do you take for them to recognize Galileo?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
he does have that interview with the Catholic scientist.
Yeah.
That's a very positive interview.
I think this expose, what he's doing, it's from the top down. He's not criticizing individual people believing. He's criticizing the top of the church. The Catholic Church was very complicit with Hitler in the murder of the Jews. The Nazis were helped to escape, and they went to Brazil. A lot of that was through the Catholic Church. You got to read the history, folks, and understand what it is. And this is the problem. There's too much stuff that these religions have done in the name of a God that has just been abhorrent. we think suicide bombing is bad today. You know, read about the Inquisition and, if, and the Crusades and all the other things. So those are Christian religions.
Except they're actually powered by power, by wanting.
What's that?
By wanting power.
Oh, it's all about power. I mean, a lot of people think that
that's
Catholic.
That's why they can advise to the Bible.
A lot of people think Catholic priests aren't married today because Paul wasn't married and Jesus wasn't married. The Catholic Church didn't want them to be married because they were commingling their private funds with the church funds, and they wanted to leave a legacy to their children. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden they just said, you can't be married, and their wives and children starved to death. They just left them to starve to death.
Well, the official word on birth control currently still is from the Pope. Just the last few months.
From the Pope and the Republicans and Mr. Walker.
Is opposed to all forms of birth control, except their usual, you know.
Which doesn't work.
So-called rhythm method.
Listen, it's not just...
It's so official.
I just find religion as hypocrisy, courage at its most elegant extreme. I mean, Marr defines it as a joke. Well, it's not necessarily a joke. It's more like
it's not really funny.
It isn't really funny, but it is a hypocrisy. We went to the National Church in Washington, D.C., and we went to this little garden area. And in the garden, there's this huge church with spires and arcs and all this other stuff. Just enormous. And dead presidents in it, too. And we go out in the garden, and it says written in Latin, and it said, can you remember exactly? Well, basically, it said, "Through man's humility, we come to know God." And it's in this little garden, and this church is just overwhelming the garden, and it's just like, "Where am I? This is better than Disneyland," you know. But it's just hypocrisy carried to its most elegant. If you trace the arguments and everything else. With a clear mind, they have no standing because they're absolutely elegant. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
When I was was with a choir, a chorus who sang it in St. Peter's, we did the 5 o'clock mass. And one of the things we sang was "'Tis a gift to be simple."
And you're surrounded by tears.
There's not one surface that isn't embellished. It's just amazing. Whereas later on we sang it in the catacombs, and that was very powerful. Because of course that was very simple, and that was, but it was so incongruous.
But isn't it elegant though? I mean,
it's terribly elegant.
I love it.
There is nothing
the sculptors of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
On the other hand, there are small groups of Quakers who went from Madison to North Vietnam in little boats during the war to bring medical equipment. Mm-hmm. John Brown, who gave his life, was a very religious man. Yeah. Every time the Pope speaks out against capital punishment, I am grateful. I mean, and he weighs in on when people are fighting for someone's life.
So at least he's consistent.
So the priest who, I can't think of his name, who founded the School of the Americas Watch is just, Roy Vachon, just has changed the hearts. And, you know, and people from Edgewood go, and nuns have spent a year in federal prison for trespassing. I mean, so there's the other side.
Yeah, but the point is, you don't need religion to do all that stuff.
But for some good people,
but for a
as
lot
a matter of
people,
fact, some
it
of them
does
are dismissed from their churches. For
Well,
you do need a following.
Under an order of silence.
Huh?
You do need a following. Following.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People support
a community.
Yeah.
As opposed to leader and follower.
You can't do it on your own.
Yeah. I think this is an issue that she brought up that I think we touched on last time, I think, a bit. In terms of needing religion in order to do something, a lot of the people who are in various missions in various countries are doing it because they feel that God has told them to, because that this is where God has told them that they belong, etc., etc., and that it has to do with their relationship with God, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. And a lot of them are doing very, very good work in addition to proselytizing, but there's a lot of life-saving that's going on as well.
But don't you think that
my question would be, would those particular people have done this without their belief? And I don't know.
Right. It seems to me that churches reinforce basic good feeling, good sentiments in people who would be inclined to help others even without the...
But I mean, you're not born with the knowledge how to do politically good things.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
You know, you're taught. Everything like that is taught somewhere.
Institutions
sometimes.
Of some sort give you the path, guidance.
Exactly.
Also, I think you're more likely to act on your ideas if you're part of a group that's going in the same direction. For better or worse.
Oh, sure, that's the point.
Right. Right. Some what guides you doesn't have to be a church. I mean, there's a difference between God and a church, and what guides you doesn't have to be a church or a religious institution.
Right. No, it doesn't.
I mean,
have
frankly,
to be.
My feeling, and this is just my feeling, is that the family has more, and parents have more to do with how what your values are and how you feel about good and evil than a church.
But Pat, where do the parents and grandparents learn their values?
From their parents.
Yeah, but where? I mean, you know, it's like the chicken and the egg. It starts somewhere.
If you didn't know about religion, then would you, everybody just be bad? There was no
religion.
It'd
be good for nothing.
Yeah, everybody be good for nothing.
You'd be eccentric.
What's that quote about, you know, people will be good, but in order for things to be bad, you need religion?
That's closer to the truth.
You see the bad for contrast.
Coming to Madison and demonstrating around the square, motivated by concern about their fellow citizens in the state of Wisconsin. And a few of those have had signs that indicate a religious connection, but a very small number.
But look at Martin Luther King and his tremendous importance. But he was a devout,
He wasn't really proselytizing, though.
No,
he didn't need to be. He was a pastor. I mean, he had.
Yeah, but
people
were not
drawn to religion.
I know, but I mean, his civil rights ideas came out of a deep religious faith.
Well,
maybe not.
Well, from his writing, if you read enough of his writing, you'll see that.
Could I respond to that?
Please.
In many cases, the secondary education of the black population, and Pat will probably say something about this, you could not go to an institution of higher learning. In other words, you couldn't go to Columbia, or you couldn't go to Dartmouth. You had to go to a black school. And most of those schools were theology schools. Mm-hmm. So whether he was a pastor or not, his education was into the black school system, which of course was supported by religion. So I don't know if he's a pastor by choice or a pastor by experience.
But I don't think that makes any, that doesn't matter.
Well, what I'm saying
is,
I don't know if this religious training was carrying him towards the, towards his
heaven.
Right.
I wonder if the fact that he was a minister would, it made what he did work much better. He was much more effective.
Well, he was a leader.
In the civil rights movement then.
So was Malcolm X.
What if he had been an avowed atheist instead of a minister?
Too.
Well, yeah, but you had
a leader, a charismatic leader,
and a lot of other black leaders who were.
Don't you
executed.
Think his experiences as a black person? Suffering injustice gave him a keen sense of justice.
I don't
want
to talk about experiences as a black person because I'm not a black person. Yeah.
He was the son of a minister.
Yeah.
Many of the leaders of the civil rights movement were ministers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the building of the movement happened in churches.
Mm-hmm.
He went to India. He studied Gandhi, and that nonviolence was taught nightly and committed to nightly. I mean, this was huge and did have a lot of...
In East Germany, the first... The movement that finally resulted in the tearing down of the wall, they met in churches with progressive pastors. When I lived in Frankfurt for 12 years, I joined the left wing of the Lutheran Church in there, and we formed a an anti-stationing of the Pershings and stationing all this weaponry that the Americans did in West Germany in highly populated area. We were working together with the leftist Lutherans and their pastors and the American and other foreigners in Germany. So, you know, we have to remember it's not just a black and white thing, single simple thing.
Well, I think
that's because churches form a social network. The fall of Egypt, which fell in 18 days, came from 60,000 people social networking on Facebook.
Well,
is that the new religion?
Don't ask me about Facebook. I'm not into that. But I mean,
no, I mean, I think she's got a good point. I don't want to discount
her.
I mean, that's where that started a year before. With 60,000 people, young people in Egypt, getting involved on Facebook and discussing it. And I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. The churches form a social network and they serve that purpose.
But they are not just an impersonal network. They have to be also people who fill this network. You know, a church is not just a shell. It is filled with people with a content. And the content in East Berlin, I have had very close ties there, of course. That was the network of like the civil rights movement of freedom and
because
against
that was the prevailing social network.
But it
historically
was,
of the day, where
but I mean,
people could meet.
Fine, but I mean, you can have a church. But
that's
you can
a
have
community.
A,
Facebook is a community.
You can have a church building filled of radical Islamists or radical communists or something that you wouldn't agree with.
But then they'll have a community that will act on their common.
But the church wouldn't allow you in. If the church didn't agree with what you're talking about and what you're planning, which was a bloodless revolution in Germany, a really fantastic thing, they wouldn't have allowed those people in if they didn't agree.
Those people would have their own church or their own community. I'm sorry, no.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so basic is the issue of justice. Mm-hmm. And when religious folks get too enthused about justice sometimes and it starts to roil the upper levels of the churches, then there's a big conflict. And many of the Jesuits, many of the people that I know and worked with in the civil rights movement, when they got to the point where they were really into the justice issue, which is the basic issue, and then it caused consternation in the communities of the churches that they were in. And in the 60s, I remember the marches in Boston, the movement toward fair housing, and initially a lot of ministers and priests and religious folks would come out, but when we really got into it to actually make real social change, to integrate schools, to integrate public housing authorities, to integrate many of the issues that were still segregated in Boston, many of the pastors who got all the complaints from the bigoted congregational members withdrew their younger clergy. And only a few people then remained who were really adamant and actually got the schools integrated and the housing authorities integrated and so on. So there is a big problem that I think, I don't know if Bill actually refers to that in the movie, but this whole notion, if you really start shaking the tree, that's when a lot of people get into difficulty because the upper echelons of the church have made concordia or things with the power base in civil society, and that's one of the big issues. Yeah. And that's why, in that famous, what's that movie with Robert De Niro that we liked so much?
Logan Greenfield?
With the Indians, that we saw that movie.
Oh, the mission.
The mission. In the movie, The Mission, which Robert De Niro starred in, had to do with a very elemental tribe in, I think it was Paraguay or Uruguay. And the Spanish wanted to come in and enslave that tribe. And so there's a big battle goes on, and eventually, you know, the Spanish lust for gold allowed to prevail, and then the church authorities wanting to keep the concord with the Spanish king and queen allowed that slave to be tried. And that's so back to the basic justice issue. And justice, of course, that you can be a humanist, as well as a religionist, and really get into the justice issue.
You know, the Vatican replayed it with liberation theology back in the 70s. They never supported what was going on with Father Romero or anything.
I know of a minister once who was a Unitarian minister in Jackson, Mississippi in 1965. When I was down there as a volunteer for the summer with the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and I got invited to his apartment before I left. And if I returned to Madison, he was shot with a buckshot, multiple small wounds, and left Mississippi after that. I went to work in Rochester, Massachusetts. Oh, right.
I think this is playing out in a different way with the gay issue in churches right now, in terms of pastors maybe wanting to sympathize and to be inclusive, but not wanting to lose their pledge units and their jobs, which is a real threat. I mean, I think there's just a lot of kind of similarities going on with that particular moment at the time, this time.
One of the scenes in the movie was him interviewing a person who had been gay and then married and had a couple of kids and was
still gay.
Totally anti.
He was cured. He was cured of gay.
Cured of being gay. So his whole ministry was to help other people who thought they might be gay to cure them of that. That was an interesting little interview.
I
love to see
the movie. What was the name of the movie?
Religiosity.
Religiosity.
I was wound up with the capital and I forgot about it.
So that was an interesting sort of confrontation scene. Because then the guy who he was interviewing said, well, if you obviously have an agenda and, you know, sort of you're out of here, but then they kept going, of course. Mm-hmm. So it was too tempting to talk.
Well, I think
in fact, they hugged you.
Yeah, they hugged you.
Yes, at the end.
Close.
I think what Mayor was trying to suggest, that people divorce the myth from the essential truths that might be in the religions. So strip away the stuff that is obviously not true and get to the core of the truths of the religions. I think there may be a place for people to be comforted by their religion, but they don't have to swallow the myths. They can recognize, for instance, fairy tales have a core in them of rewarding the good and punishing the bad. So, I mean, that in all fairy tales, there's a core, you know, there's a teaching in them. And there's a teaching in religions as well, but we don't have to swallow all the stuff that surrounds the core.
One of the things he points out in the movie is that the story of many of the stories in the Bible were preceded by very similar stories that were recognized as fiction at the time.
I just finished, I have a large collection of folk tales and fairy tales, And I just finished reading a collection of folk tales from the Amur in Siberia. Mm. And there's a story in there that's just like Moses in the bulrushes. So there are universal stories how they got around, but
well, the Greeks had gods, and then when Rome started up, Rome had the same gods with new names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's when they did the Council of Nicaea. Yeah. That was to iron all the different gods out.
Right.
You know, pagans on one corner. And that's why. That's how they came up with what. There's a really good thing on the History Channel about the missing books of the Bible. And there are a number of them that they left out because they were so bizarre and weird that they knew if they included them, nobody would buy them.
So it's all about plagiarism.
Well, religion is. I mean, if you look up Google God's born on December 25th, there's like 25 of them, and they all are born of a virgin, have a star in the east. Shepherds came to, or whatever, you know, kings came to honor them. And I mean, it's like Osiris. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of them. They're all the same. So the Jesus myth is just a myth that was passed down. What did people have back then? They didn't have television. They had nothing. They didn't have books. They just had stories to tell. You know, that's all it was.
That's right. That's right. And the good stories persist.
Yep.
I'm sorry to be contrary, but I've also heard that the idea that so many of these stories are universal, for example, most cultures have a flood story, is a testimony to the fact that it once happened. So there's the other side.
Geologists refer to the Great Deluge.
Well,
we know that.
They know about a great flood that was caused by the breaking of an ice dam on our continent, but that didn't cover the whole world.
The Armageddon story, which I think I may have it wrong, but I think that there is an Armageddon story in the Old Testament that has been picked up in Revelation. But in any case, I got on the website some years ago for Megiddo and the place in Israel where it's supposed to happen, and the people who have been studying, I'm going to say archaeologists who have been studying Megiddo, at the time I was on the website, these were people from various universities. It's been a kind of a collaborative, and I apologize for not having the specifics because it's been a while since I looked at it, but they pretty much agreed that this was an event that had happened already, and it was kind of being picked up later, referring to that, and I've forgotten the name of the person that came up with a lot of the end times stories, but somebody here probably knows. And then it turned into this end times story that has now been fictionalized here in the United States, but fictionalized, but a lot of people believe it. So. And it was right on the website where they said that most of the scientists agreed that this is something that had happened in the past. I couldn't find it on the website the last time I looked it up. And I've just wondered if because so many Christians are giving money to various places in Israel, if somebody felt that maybe it wasn't politics to keep it there. I don't know. My apologies if I'm wrong. It seems to me it was very useful information to have had on that site.
Some of the quotations associated with this movie seem to indicate that Bill Maher really believes that it's the future of humanity is at stake, depending on whether these religions grow or not. I guess he tends to focus on the most extreme cases. Do we think that his movie is going to convert anybody who's really a true believer?
Are religions growing?
Well, evangelical ones are, for example, in Africa.
Somewhere.
Yeah. In certain parts of the world.
Global warming is the largest, but Christianity is certainly sort of like falling.
Depends on which Christianity you're looking at, I think.
Right.
Well, if you, the Europe, in this country, we seem to be a religious country. Uh-huh. But the European countries, for instance, are not. Mm-hmm. And
but in like South America, in parts of Africa, well, especially in South America, the evangelicals are replacing the Catholics.
Yeah.
In a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. The Mormons are very large too, which is just bizarre that anybody could comprehend Mormonism.
Right. But they send out, you know, all their kids to proselytize.
Army
them.
Yeah.
They also baptized a lot of people. They got, you know.
Right, even if you're dead.
Well, yeah, a lot of dead people, including Jewish people. They were, you know, they think that if you were baptized a Mormon, they will see you in the afterlife. And they've been baptizing Jews for ages until the Jewish churches or Jewish synagogues and a bunch of rabbis got really upset about it.
After death.
After death.
Yeah,
yeah.
You don't have
that's
a chance.
That's the best time to do it.
They keep keeping the records. Yeah. That's why they keep the records.
Right, so, all your relatives can get baptized even if they're dead.
That, all that's true, and of course the numbers are huge. Yeah. If you include all those that the Mormons claim that they've added to their numbers. But a lot of those, as you point out, dead or a lot of them are.
The Mormon Church spent $25 million on Proposition 8 in California.
Yeah.
For that, so to keep gay people from being married.
But a car is that what you can find? Well,
that's a lot of money in my book.
According to what you can find on the web, that still, we don't know that they've actually added significant numbers of living people to the Mormonism. There are large numbers that are leaving.
There's
a lot of the children. A high percentage of Mormon children decide not to be Mormons. And those aren't, I don't think the Mormon Church keeps those statistics. They'll tell you they're increasing the numbers hugely.
Sure.
But if you subtract all the people who, especially young people, who leave Mormonism, and all the people that the Mormons claim that they have added to their numbers, which isn't true, they're simply aggrandizing them, it's doubtful that the total number of Mormons in the world is growing significantly.
But, I mean, we do know that religion is having an effect all over the world. I mean, what is that South American country where you can now kill gays?
Uganda?
That's Africa. And, I mean, that's pointing to a direct influence of increased influence in some church or other.
They're different churches.
In the movie, they introduced
abortion doctors now.
There's no question but what there's a concerted effort throughout the whole entire world on the part of certain groups. We talked, you know, before about the family in Washington, D.C., but that's not the only one, to basically turn the world into a Christian world. And, if you're called evangelical, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You evangelize.
Yeah.
And, some people do it in different ways. Some people are not interested at all in taking over the universe, but there, I think, is a growing number of people who are, and in some pretty high places.
And you want an example in the Army, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has this lovely article. They're now having a new spiritual survey, and if you're atheist, you automatically go to the bottom of the list and have to go to sort of remedial Army school for spirituality.
Who is the
that's disturbing?
The military.
Yes.
I doubt that. Because they've been doing.
They've been trying to open up.
If you think about who it is that volunteers to join the Army, then stands to reason that those people would try to influence the people around them.
Well, the
evangelical
Christians have taken over the military. military.
Yeah, I bet it's, I'm not surprised.
Wasn't there a general that said, "My God is stronger than your God"?
Yes.
Well, they used to, you know, they used to have those gun rifles that had the...
Oh, too, yeah. With all the scripture on it. Yeah.
Give them the air.
Which shows the danger of having an only volunteer army.
Army, that's true.
That, yeah.
Shows the danger of having a army.
Yeah, well, I disagree with that.
Including remarks. Rose, you had something.
Yes. At this point, it might be useful. Maybe you've noticed this array of literature I've got on the table. I just, when going through my stuff, I must have picked this up at Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. So there are bumper stickers, there's literature, and so on. So please take them away.
It's apropos of our current governor.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're afraid it's really going to push the...
Yeah, he's destroying public education.
He wants a lot of money spent.
But he wants vouchers.
Government money spent for good vouchers, school vouchers. So
help yourself.
So kids can go to religious Christian schools on the government.
Can you turn
what
do
we have some around
the next one to them? Yeah, what's that?
Well, I find it interesting that we can have not enough food to eat, no shelter for our heads, no education, no hope, but we can have God.
People want to pass those around. We'll just
thank
pass
you all
them
for
around
coming.
Everybody wants to. What are they?